He's.
Oh, you're gay.
Radio Drome.
It's another episode of Radio Drome. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's up to you. I'm Josh Hadley. With me, nearly as always, is Cecil the Robot.
How did I become Cecil?
And Peter's not with us this week because Canadian Thanksgiving is this week, and so he's busy. Canadians are weird, Cecil.
Canadian Thanksgiving? Like, what even is that?
I don't know. I asked him, and he didn't get back to me before the show. He just said Canadian Thanksgiving is there, and he can't be on this week. So I'm like, you Canadians are just weird.
I think Canadian Thanksgiving, they apologize to a turkey.
If you'd want to have something to apologize for, you go to adamandeve.com. You go and you use the promo code DROME, and you will get 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping, all for using the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. Tonight, we're not going to talk about what we were going to talk about because Peter's not here. Cecil, let's you and I look at what are considered to be the worst horror and science fiction movies of all time, and let's see if they really are the worst. Now, I'm not going to necessarily go in chronological order here when we're going to be kind of jumping around, but if you had to name your personal the worst, not a movie you don't like, but I mean a movie that ineptly written, ineptly directed, ineptly acted, ineptly edited, the worst sci-fi or horror movie of all time, what is it for you?
Because see, I think I always think of like the worst like movies, which often aren't always sci-fi and horror movies, like I Accidentally Domed Your Son, which I reference frequently as one of possibly the worst movie ever. But I always put that in like the worst. As far as like really bad sci-fi or horror, that's tough. Before we started recording, I was saying The House of the Dead is tough because that's really like it has a little bit of watchability, but it's still just so like ineptly bad. Jürgen Prochnow is trying really hard, and it has what's her name? It has Erica Durance in it, who ended up becoming a Supergirl on Smallville. And it was, I'm pretty sure this movie probably paid for her implants. And
it also has one of the best lines of dialogue ever. Why do you want to become immortal? To live forever. That is genius dialogue. I'm sorry.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. Let's see. Dracula 3000 was pretty bad. That was the one with Coolio.
With Coolio as a pot-smoking vampire in outer space. And
yeah.
That movie had arguably one of the best worst endings I have ever seen.
Oh.
Flying into the sun. They know they're all dead. So it's just like, you want to get it on? Sure. I'm just like, wait, what?
Yeah, and it's just like, and then it just, they're getting it on, and then they just fly into the sun. It is the perfect ending to that thing. Oh, I got it. I can't believe I didn't think of it. Battlefield Earth, absolutely, is just a train wreck of monumental proportions. Like
I saw it in the theater.
I saw it in the theater, too, and I was pissed. Because the thing was, I like Travolta, and he was, I mean, Battlefield Earth has
poor
got...
Forrest Whitaker.
Oh, poor Forrest Whitaker. Well, you know what? He'll be fine. He's one of those guys that's just in, like, 800 movies, like, every year. I like Travolta a lot. He was plugging the movie so hard and about how it was, this is the perfect... this is the perfect retelling of the book. And I know the book series is like ridiculously, what are they on, like 20 volumes or something? So
the
I was like,
books are terrible. Okay.
Are they?
This is how well the books are written. Remember that how the humans and the Cyclopes
can't breathe
the same air?
Humans.
Not just that, but remember how they can't breathe the same air?
Right. Well, the Cyclopes, they breathe carbon monoxide.
No, according to the book, they breathe gas. I'm not kidding. In the book, they breathe gas. They need masks for breathe gas. That's how it's described. That's the level we're talking about here, Cecil.
Oh my
breathe
God.
Gas.
Breathe gas.
Yes. L. Ron Hubbard was a fucking hack.
Yeah, well, he managed to figure out a way to get tax-exempt status.
Not even him. I'm not going to get into Scientology, but it was his successors that figured that out. They didn't get tax-exempt status till the 90s. L. Ron Hubbard was dead by then.
I thought he was alive.
He'd been battling for like 18 years. He owed over $1 billion in taxes by the time they finally got their tax-exempt status. And how they did it was they bullied the IRS. They sued them over 3,000 times for every minor little thing, and it would have cost the IRS more. And they said, look, just give us tax-exempt status, and we'll drop every one of the 3,000 lawsuits.
Wow.
They literally bullied the IRS into going, fine, just fucking take it.
You know, that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
They played a good gambit and they won. So breathe. God, I need some breathe gas. I am breathing out of like one nostril right now.
Okay.
Stupid weather.
Now, if I had to pick, this is going to be a weird one for me. I'm down to two that I think are the absolute worst, most inept ever. I'm going to go with An American Werewolf in Paris. Highlander 2 The Quickening was on my list because
movie, but
I got to say the production design on that was so gorgeous. I'm going to not let that one be completely inept because it looked beautiful.
It looked really good, but yeah, it was just a mess. But the American Werewolf in Paris isn't that bad.
American Werewolf in Paris is embarrassingly bad. I think House of the Dead is more well-made than American Werewolf in Paris.
Oh, poppycock.
Okay, what are you, a grizzled 1860s prospector?
See? No.
Go suck on some breathe gas.
House of the Dead. They put like low-res video game footage in there. Terrible. Like, I mean, at least, I don't know. I enjoyed, is American Werewolf in Paris even remotely in the same vicinity of the original? No, but I mean, it was still like funny and entertaining.
You know what? A more true sequel to American Werewolf in London was the Masters of Horror episode Dear Woman, which is connected continuity wise to American Werewolf in London. That's a more true sequel than American Werewolf in Paris was. Some other ones like that I want to kick off the list. There's some movies that are considered so bad, but like Exorcist 2, okay, the acting is terrible. The script is beyond bad. That is one of the most beautiful films I have ever seen in my life. If you just mute Exorcist 2, The Heretic, that movie is gorgeous. It is so well made. I can't see how anyone can hate that movie, even for how stupid its script is.
Oh, God, it's been so long since I've seen two that I honestly don't remember. I remember barely anything about it, so I can't even say if it's good or bad. I'm at the point where I don't remember it being good or bad.
Okay, well, what about what is considered one of the worst sequels of all time? Howling 2, Your Sister's a Werewolf, Steerbo Werewolf Bitch, or It's Not Over Yet? It had different times, each of those different surtitles. Howling 2 is bad. There's no debating that. Yet I enjoy the hell out of it. How can you not love Reb Brown going, aah! While shooting werewolves and Christopher Lee in a punk rock club?
Yeah, how can you not love, like, Christopher Lee is, like, in a freaking Howling movie.
With Reb Brown!
With Reb Brown.
And Simple Panic!
I forget, did Joe Dante direct that one?
No. In fact, Joe Dante hated that movie so
much. Right, that's
when Christopher Lee, his first day on the set of Gremlins 2, he apologized to Joe Dante for being in Howling 2. Howling 2 was directed by Philip Mora, who also did Howling 3 as well.
What was 3 the exploitation one, the marsupials?
Yes. I liked 3 a lot, honestly.
Marsupials is fucking great.
Gerba, the main werewolf chick, is so gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
She's so beautiful in that you can even overlook the fuzzy pouch in her stomach.
Yeah, it's like, all right, you know what? So she's going to have a baby out of the little pet. Whatever. It's all good.
She's still hot.
Marsupials was great. I, again, not on par with the first one, but absolutely enjoyable in its own right. But 2 is kind of a disaster.
the thing I love the most about it, now I don't know this for a fact, and Mike White even brought this up to Gary Bradner, because it has nothing to do with Gary Bradner's novel of Howling 2. But the movie, I swear, was originally written as a vampire film. And then they just did Microsoft Word replace and changed vampire to werewolf when they got the Howling license. Because in Howling 2, vampires hail from Transylvania. They are allergic to garlic. They don't like holy water. They can transform into mist. They have mystical power. They have, you know, mystical hypnotic powers. And they can only be killed with a stake through the heart. You tell me that this was not originally a goddamn vampire script.
Yeah, they kind of really rejiggered that one around. Just,
I mean, like, I can't prove it, but you watch that movie and you go, this was a vampire movie.
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess they got the license. They had to make a werewolf movie, but it was a vampire movie.
So that one, I love that movie despite how bad it is. And now, remember, I don't prescribe to the so bad it's good philosophy. I just think it's not as bad as its reputation. Because there's a lot of these films we're going to bring up. Now, I'm trying to stick to horror and sci-fi. This one is just barely there. The Apple. It's a bad movie, but it's an enjoyably bad movie. You get into it. You get into the songs. You get into the asinine story. I don't know how you can hate The Apple, but it's not a good movie. Does that make sense?
Because, I mean, I love it. I think it's ridiculous. But the production value is great. The dancing is great. The music is incredibly catchy.
Catherine Mary Stewart, I like her in other things. I don't think she was ever cuter than in that movie.
She was beautiful in that.
I kind of like that like punk rock hairstyle she had and stuff like that. She was just mm-hmm. so gorgeous in that movie.
And I thought they did a really good job with, I thought that she was really singing those songs because everybody else did their own music, but she was the only one that they were like worried that she couldn't sing, so they hired somebody else. And I thought they did a really good matchup because the girl who did her songs, she like sometimes when you watch a movie, like when you see Back to the Future and you see Michael J. Fox singing Johnny B. Goode, and you're like, all right, that is absolutely positively not Michael J. Fox's voice. But the girl who they got for Catherine Mary Stewart, like, I was like, if I didn't find out, I would have always just assumed that she was genuinely singing those songs. I don't know. I think that she was very cute in that, but I always had a crush on her from Night of the Comet. I just like she was just the quintessential.
She was a nerd girl in that too.
Right, that's the thing. She played was Space Invaders.
Tempest,
that's it.
And she knew obscure Superman trivia.
Yeah, and she was willing to bone her lousy boyfriend in the movie theater. You know what I mean? that's a girl I can get behind.
Literally. Well, like another movie considered the worst is The Swarm. Really? I mean, even Michael Caine, he made Jaws the Revenge. And in the 90s, he was asked, what does he think is his worst film? He said The Swarm from 1978. Come on! I think The Swarm is... It's not a good movie. I appreciate the balls that they killed an entire elementary school of kids on camera. You didn't do that a lot in mainstream 70s films.
No.
And I enjoyed The Swarm. I mean, it's stupid. I really liked it. I don't know. I saw it like 2 or 3 years ago. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's always funny when you have an actor who like will completely disown a film that's not that bad. Like Bruce Willis hates Hudson Hawk. And I'm like, how can
he made it?
Hudson Hawk. It's like he owned that movie. Like, come on. Like,
and
he,
it's legitimately funny too.
It's legitimately funny. It's well produced. It's, I mean, I can understand people not liking it because it's, you know, it is like you're expecting kind of a diehard thing, but it's a very comedic, goofy movie. And I can get people that aren't into that, but to just flat out trash that as like, especially considering some of the garbage that Bruce Willis has been in, the
Jackal
and Die Hard 5. Yeah, like you're going to denounce Hudson Hawk, but you're not going to say that the Jackal was, you know, that, believe me, that's way bigger garbage than Hudson Hawk. Cop Out, as much as it hurts me, like, it's bad.
I wanted to like
Cop Out, but it was a combination of, it just wasn't like, it was not the type of film that Kevin Smith like he did that for his dad, and I get it because his dad liked buddy cop movies. Tracy Morgan was just grating. Like, he ad-libbed everything, and you could tell Bruce Willis didn't want to be there. it did not feel like a Kevin Smith movie, which I guess is what he was kind of going for. But yeah, it really, because I was super excited about Cop Out, because he was plugging it, you know, back when it was still called A Couple of Dicks. I was like, oh, it's gonna be funny. But then, like, immediately you could tell, all right, this is not Kevin Smith's writing. And it was, you know, somebody else wrote it. And
also,
it was
Tracy
just...
Morgan took over that damn movie, and he is one of the least funny comedians out there.
I do not like him at all. He's just, it's like, hey, I'm going to say a bunch of random stuff, and it's going to be funny. You know, it's like,
there's macaroni in my pants, now laugh.
Yeah, macaroni in my underpants. Papa Smurf was a pimp. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
Tracy Morgan is one of the... He and Larry the Cable Guy are probably the two not funniest comedians I've ever seen in movies. And I've seen Disorderlies.
I like Disorderlies.
I know you do. Of course you do.
I know, of course I do. I like everything, apparently.
What about Superman 4, The Quest for Peace? That's another universally considered terrible movie. Now, that one, I'll give you. That movie is god-awful. I know why it's god-awful. Because of all the budget stuff and Canon going broke and all the creative interference and all that. But that doesn't change the fact that it's a genuinely hard to sit through a movie because it is so bad. Now, keep in mind, I'm the guy that still thinks Richard Pryor was actually funny in 3, and I can't sit through 4.
A 3 definitely has its moments. Dude, the part at the end where the girl gets turned into, like, the Eradicator, basically, that scared the hell out of me as a kid.
I thought Richard Pryor was legitimately funny in that movie.
And Pryor was, now, I think from what if I remember correctly, Pryor was pretty much baked the entire time. But he still...
You can kind of tell. You just look at his eyes on camera, you can kind of tell.
But he was funny, you know? He was funny, and it was better than Superman Returns.
Well, that's because something happened in it. Nothing happened in Superman freaking Returns.
Yeah, except for bad CGI. And I felt bad for Brandon Routh, because that should have been a star-making role for him, because he's a good actor. But wow, did that just, it completely implode.
Now, I'm going to be of two minds on Howard the Duck. I don't think it is a terrible movie. I think it is an abysmal Howard the Duck movie. As a fan of Howard the Duck all the way back from the Steve Gerber years, I understand why Steve Gerber was absolutely embarrassed by that film as an adaptation of his character. So I don't think it's that bad of a movie if it had not been Howard the Duck. I fucking despise it. As a Howard the Duck movie, though. They could not have gotten that character more wrong.
Like, I still don't really know Howard the Duck all that well as far as, you know, a comic book character, because I never read the books. But I always enjoyed the movie for what it was. But there are certain movies where you can kind of understand. It's like, okay, this isn't a bad movie, but it is a bad insert thing movie, you know. So it wasn't a bad movie, but it was a bad Howard the Duck movie.
I think that same thing about Constantine. I adore the Keanu Reeves Constantine movie, but holy shit, did they get every single thing about the comic version of the character wrong. So
yeah,
they
even got the hair wrong. You know,
they even got the ethnicity wrong. I love the movie, but to me, that's not a Constantine movie, no matter what you call it. But it's a great movie. It's a terrible adaptation. And that's what I think Howard the Duck is. It's not a bad movie. God, is it a horrible Howard the Duck movie.
Have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
I have no interest in it. I hate James Gunn.
Oh, shush. God, how can you hate James Gunn? Worked a trauma for Christ. He's somebody who he broke out of, you know, he's probably
the most
successful guy out of trauma.
I don't like James Gunn's writing. I don't know if it's intentional or not. He has a writing style similar to that of Joss Whedon, which just bugs me. I've seen a bunch of the movies he's written, and the only one I even remotely liked was Dawn of the Dead. And I hated that video game he wrote, Lollipop Chainsaw, where he's...
Oh, you're gay.
He seemed to, for Lollipop Chainsaw, he seemed to think, let's make 500 different variations on the word fuck, that's witty. No, it's not.
I love Lollipop Chainsaw. I like James Gunn's writing. He seems like he's... I think that his stuff, it comes off just off, like, I don't know, authentic nerd, as opposed to, like, fake buzzword nerd.
To me, his stuff comes across as snark is funny, so everybody gets to talk in snark. And I don't like that.
Oh, super terrific.
I've seen Slither, which I hated. I wanted... I wanted to like Slither. I'm like, this is like Squirm and Alien Contamination together. And it's like, wow, everything in this did not work for me. I'm not a fan of James Gunn. If you like him, fine, like him. I'm not saying you're a homo, but
what I was getting into was at the very end of Guardians of the Galaxy, they had a stinger and
with Howard the Duck. I've seen
with Howard the Duck, and a lot of people were like, "Holy crap! You know, please do a Howard," because the Howard the Duck that they had looked a lot more like the comic book version. Because the thing was,
it didn't have to be a midget in a suit.
It didn't have to be a midget in a suit, you know. And I think that Howard was not kind of so as rotund as they made him in the original movie, but that was because they had to fit an actual person in there. I thought they nailed the look of it in the that little clip, and I would love for them to do a Howard the Duck movie that is more authentic to the comic book. But I think that a movie like that is doomed to fail because too many people will automatically think of the Lucas version and won't be willing to give the movie a shot. Which is just a shame, because it's like, look, we're going to make it closer to how the comic book is. We're not going to make it look, you know, like this. Worst movie ever. Well, have you ever seen it? No, but I heard it was the worst movie ever.
Well, let's go to it's funny how the Piranha and Piranha 3 Double D kind of made people notice the original two Piranha movies again. Piranha 2 The Spawning, James Cameron's quote debut feature, is considered one of the worst sequels of all time. I don't know how. First of all, it's an eminently enjoyable film. Second, maybe it's because I saw it on late night UHF television. Even when I see it on DVD, it feels like 3 a.m. on a local fuzzy channel. And maybe that's my nostalgia taking over from my brain. I think Piranha 2 is not a bad film. It's not a good film, but I enjoy the hell out of Piranha 2 The Spawning.
Yeah, Piranha 2 is not bad at all. I mean, it's not... it's not a great movie, but like there are far worse movies.
The remake is way worse.
I disagree. I like the Piranha remake, and I even liked Double D sequel, whatever. They were just like, all right, look, we don't have as much money as we did the first time around, but we got a lot of tits, and I'm like, all right. I'm in. The second one, they knew, like, all right, we're just going to up the ridiculous factor. And I was cool with that. I like when a movie just is completely stupid. But entertainingly stupid, not just stupid. No, I don't think that the Piranha remakes are bad at all. And I don't think that Spawning is, it's funny. You know, it's, you get flying piranhas. Come on. You know, there are much worse movies out there that cost, like, probably one of the actors' craft services fee cost more than Piranha 2 did. And that movie gave James Cameron his freaking start.
And introduced him to Lance Henriksen.
Yes. I mean, come on.
One of the worst modern genre-ish horror franchise sequels, Aliens versus Predator Requiem.
The current edit of the first Alien versus Predator is, like, I still want to see the real director's cut, you know, because they released the, you know, the unrated, and they've said, they're like, no, that's not the cut that was made. But for whatever reason, they're not, because there's a whole chunk of that movie still missing, and the kills are missing.
I didn't hate the first Alien vs. Predator. Well, I didn't like it, but I didn't hate it.
Well, have you ever read the graphic novel? It's very.
I'm gonna fucking stab you in the dick for calling it a graphic novel.
Oh, all right. The comic book?
Yeah, you know, it was released as 5 issues over 5 months of a comic book. That's not a graphic novel.
All right. Well, the first, when I read it, I read it as a graphic novel.
No, you read it as a trade paperback. Get your damn comic nerd terminology down.
Maybe I don't know the terminology, but I'll show you my freaking collection, and it's goddamn ridiculous.
Cecil, I'm older than you. I bought all of them new.
Yeah, I got it. God, I don't even remember.
I had to wait a month between issues.
Ooh, that's tough.
But yes, I've read the original one. Damn, that was good. Part of that kind of made it to the movie.
Right. Well, the whole, you know, Broken Tusk's Predator and, you know, the girl kind of joining sides with the Predator and all that. Like, this, I really want to see, because if you look at that, like, I know you're not a big fan of Paul Anderson, is easily his worst movie, but it's so bad by a by a heavy margin, because it's like all the stuff that he's done in other movies, in the Resident Evil movies, in the Event Horizon movies, and Soldier, like all the action and kills and stuff, they're not there because the studio freaking edited them out. And then when they released the movie on DVD, they still put them out. So the current cut, Alien vs. Predator, I like less than Requiem. My only argument about Requiem is that they decided to film large portions of the film in the dark. I'm like, all right, guys, if you're going to do it like Relic or Pandorum or something, you have to like have some sort of light balance.
Have lightning flashes as the lighting.
Yeah, it's like, look, we have to be able to see something. Because I liked Requiem for being like the story. I liked it because it was so vicious. It's like, this is what an alien movie on Earth would be like. Little kid gets freaking a face hugger. They have face huggers popping out of the pregnant women,
which makes no sense, by the way.
It still was cool. You got to figure the predators are going to have some kind of technology that we're not entirely aware of. You got the guy he's hopelessly in love with his girl who gets gored by a predator, you know, like, oh, this is going to be the heroic love story.
That's the problem, though.
She's dead.
That's the problem. There are no characters in that film. I said this in my initial review of it. They could have just had cardboard cutouts of these actors, and it would have made no difference to the story, because every single person in that is so paper thin that they're just victim number one, victim number two, victim number three, facehugger victim one, predator victim number four. There's no characters at all. No character has an arc. No character has any personality whatsoever in that film.
I don't know. It worked for me. Like, because normally, yes, I want a little bit of a character arc. But sometimes, you know what? You want a balls out action movie with a lot of predators killing people and aliens killing people. And it worked for me. I just wish that it was a little bit brighter, you know, through faults of the studio and through faults of it just being too dark. I doubt we're ever going to get another one.
Well, we are getting that new Predator. They're not calling it Predator 4, but that new one by Fred Decker and Shane Black. I'm sure as hell so, looking forward to that.
So excited. I really... And I liked Predators.
I thought Predators was fantastic. I still say Predator 2 is the best film in that franchise. Predators was really damn good.
Predators was really damn good, and I was looking forward to more of that. But if you're going to give me Shane Black and Fred Decker doing a freaking... Yes! okay, you know, thank you. Is it Christmas? Like, come on, you know, having Fred Decker come back to, you know, for after, you know, God, how many decade absence to
RoboCop 3 was 94.
Yeah, so 20 years later to come back and to do Predators and have Shane Black, who was in the first one, to direct. Hell yeah, I am so on board with this. That's probably one of the most a movie that I'm like incredibly looking forward to. Like if that one ends up not being good, I don't know what's real life anymore. Because how can you have...
Is this real life or is it just fantasy?
Is this real life? Those two incredibly talented people together and put out a movie that's bad. Like, I just... It'll hurt my brain if it's not.
Well, you brought up Paul Anderson before. What about what I consider is arguably one of the worst sequels of all time? Mortal Kombat 2 Annihilation. I know he only produced that one. But holy crap, is Mortal Kombat 2 a piece of shit.
Yeah, I've tried.
Do you screw up a movie that hard?
And how do you, because, like, well, you make Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
But I mean, you almost have to set out to screw up a movie that bad. There's no way anyone was going through Mortal Kombat Annihilation going, this is going to be a good film. It, you know, it's almost like the producers was for real. We need to make the worst movie of all time.
Yeah, I was super, because the first one is so enjoyable.
And it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be, because it's like, okay, well, Mortal Kombat is known for its violence. And what do? You make it PG-13, but they still manage to skirt their way around it and make a PG-13 movie, a PG-13 Mortal Kombat movie, that still felt like, all right, you got some fatalities in there. So with the sequel, I was like, oh, hell yeah. You've got Brian Thompson, Robin Shu is back for Liu Kang. You had James Remar was not the best replacement for Raiden, but I like James Remar. But then you had Jax and like really bad action scenes.
Well,
the first one had at the time really revolutionary CGI, and then the sequel had CGI that was just like
PS1 graphics.
PS1, it was so bad.
Well, and you also had I like Moonsta Vander. I think I've liked her in a lot, like the Oblivion movies and a bunch of other stuff. Holy crap, was she terrible in that?
But mother, you're alive.
You shall die. It's like, wow, you gonna leave some of the scenery or do you chew it all? I mean, I don't know if she was doing what the director told her or if she was fucking wasted. I don't know. But what the hell was with her in that?
Yeah, she was going way over the top with that bad wig and everything. I saw Mortal Kombat like 3 times in the theater. I loved it. So when Mortal Kombat Annihilation was out, I was already sold. I'm like, yes, this is going to be awesome. And I went opening night, and wow, what a kick to the teeth. It just was so god-awful terrible. And I've had so many people like, you know, how can you have good bad flicks, but you can't have Mortal Kombat Annihilation? And I'm like, no, it's not good. Like, you can laugh at parts of it. And I've tried over and over and over again with that movie. And I'm like, no, it's just bad. There is very, like, next to nothing redeemable about it. There are a couple of scenes that you can laugh at. Like, you know, Jax gets knocked over and then it's
Johnny Cage getting his neck snapped 40 seconds after the credits.
Yeah, well, that right there, I was like, uh-oh. Like, I'm like, wait, they immediately killed off Johnny Cage? Oh, this isn't good. But yeah, what an absolute disaster. And if they had put like as much effort into and the thing is, Annihilation, the first Mortal Kombat cost $20 million. Annihilation cost $40 million. How the hell did that movie cost $40 million? Like, somebody blew the money at the racetrack.
That's what I was saying about Highlander: The Source. No way that movie cost $14 million.
Yeah, and especially when it looks like a Sci-Fi Channel original, like, how the hell does this movie cost that much? But Annihilation, all they had to do was just make it at the very least on par with the first one, and they would have had a majorly successful franchise on their hands. Because I think Annihilation opened like number one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, until people because saw people it. Were ex-
well, that was the thing. People were expecting it, and then they were like, oh god, well we thought this was going to be this, and it ended up being terrible, you know?
Well, it even comes down to, like I just brought up, Highlander: The Source. That's another movie that they had to have been trying to screw that up. There's no possible way Brett Leonard made Highlander: The Source and said, this is going to be a really good film that people are really going to enjoy. There's no possible way.
Well, what I don't get is, and this Hollywood is infamous for doing this nonsense. You've got a successful franchise, you know, in the making. The first one was a hit. You now have a much larger budget. Let's give it to a director that has never directed a movie before. And then it's like, all right, he made that and it sucked. And then he made Butterfly Effect 2, which wasn't particularly
I never
great.
Saw the second one. The first Butterfly Effect, I know it's not considered one of the worst. I hated that film from beginning to end.
I like Butterfly Effect a lot.
I hated that movie. That...
Well, 2 was basically kind of the same.
Isn't that Rob Lowe?
No, it was
Eric. No, I'm thinking of Stir of Echoes 2 was Rob Lowe. Sorry.
Yes. But no, it was, again, Erica Durant and Eric Lively. And, I mean, 2 was essentially the same story with a slight spin on it. And it's I'm looking at Leonetti's, like, thing here. This seems to be his M.O. There's a successful first movie, because you don't like Butterfly Effect, fine, but it was a big hit. I thought it was really good. And I don't like Ashton Kutcher at all. I think he's a horse's ass. But I thought he was good at that. I would have liked someone else to be in it. But again, like, Leonetti, okay, Mortal Kombat 1 was a success. Mortal Kombat 2 or Mortal Kombat Annihilation, Leonetti directs, it's a disaster. Butterfly Effect 1, success. Butterfly Effect 2, Leonetti does, and it's a disaster. The Conjuring, huge success. They give him the spinoff, Annabelle. Everyone hates it. It's like, why do they keep giving this guy work?
Because like, I've said it how many times? Hollywood is the only place you can fail upwards. We discussed this in depth when we did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre retrospective. Why does Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Beginning somehow get more hate than 3D or the remake? Because I actually thought of the modern ones, The Beginning was the least painful. Because for one, Lee Turgeson is awesome in anything, and he gave some real gravitas to it. And more Arlie Ermey is never a bad thing. Why is The Beginning actually voted the worst Texas Chainsaw Massacre? It's even got a lower score on IMDb than Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4. How is The Beginning? I mean, I didn't like it, okay. Cecil, but how is it that bad?
I have a completely valid reason for that. Because the majority of the people that are probably voting on that have never watched the other Texas Chainsaw Massacres. There's probably people out there that think that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre started with Marcus Nispel.
But okay, you and I being horror fans, is it really, I mean, isn't 4 easily the most inept of all of them? I know you liked 3D, which I think is actually worse than 4, but
you're talking the recent one.
But you got to admit, 4 is really goddamn awful.
Or 4, the one with Renee Zellweger
one.
Oh, look. All right. You want to talk about, you know, the whole so good they're bad. 4, Texas Chainsaw, is, I like that movie because it's ridiculous.
Matthew McConaughey
with robot legs.
Not just that. Matthew McConaughey is in a different film than the rest of that cast.
Oh, he certainly is. He's doing a sci-fi movie. I don't know what he's doing.
For a movie he hates and did not and says he never wanted to do, he sure as hell didn't half-ass it, did he?
But you had chubby Renee Zellweger.
Looking so cute.
Yeah. I was more fond of her in Lovin' a 45.
She was just really cute as the quote ugly girl. Remember? She was the ugly girl in that movie.
Her hair was a little mousy and she had glasses, so she's the ugly girl somehow. But now 4, I think is hilarious. Like 4 is not a good movie, but 4 is an entertaining movie because it is 18 degrees of insanity. Like it just they really pushed the Leatherface cross-dressing thing. Matthew McConaughey with robot legs.
Matthew McConaughey gets killed by a biplane.
Right, it's insane. But the thing is, like, it is more creative in its badness than the reboot and the beginning one. Like, I thought the reboot was terrible. I thought the beginning it was okay. I mean, I liked Arlie Ermey. It was less terrible, but I genuinely enjoyed. I know you didn't, but I genuinely enjoyed 3D. I was like, I honestly think if that was not a Texas Chainsaw movie, it probably people would look at it a lot differently.
Well, speaking of slashers, why does Jason X get all the hate? Jason X is fantastic,
especially when 9 exists.
Exactly, it's voted lower than 9.
How does that happen?
Jason X is tremendous fun. But I saw one website, a horror film website, what I'm not going to name, that said it's not even a real Friday the 13th movie.
Bullshit.
And I'm like, what is wrong with you people?
Yeah, they're completely nuts. Jason X is okay, it's fan service, but it's great fan service. It's funny. It's entertaining. It's got some great kills. It's got some really good special effects. It is a ton of fun. And it at least, like, it fits in with, like, it feels like a Friday the 13th movie. Granted, it's a Friday the 13th movie in space, but 9 was not a Friday the 13th movie. 9 was, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, kind of, Jason jumping out of Aaron Gray's vagina. Like, it was, like, it's terrible. Like, yeah, how could, that one baffles me.
The only thing 9 has for it is Creighton Duke.
Well, Creighton Duke, and I will say the first 5 minutes, the intro.
Oh, the FBI scene is awesome. Brilliant.
where they just shoot him with a rocket launcher. That was, I'm like, this is going to be great. And then everything after that was complete garbage.
Let's dip back to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I Spit on Your Grave is on the list of the worst films ever made. Is it a fun movie? No. Is it a bad movie? No. How is the original? Well, first of all, I Spit on Your Grave. Have you seen that remake? You should call that I Wish I Were Jigsaw, the movie.
Well, they're up to three now, which I was
serious?
Like, oh yeah, they just released the third. The second sequel to the remake, came out like a week ago, and I'm like, they managed to turn I Spit on Your Grave into the remake of I Spit on Your Grave into a franchise. Now, apparently, I've heard I Spit on Your Grave 1. Now, I haven't seen any of the remakes. I heard from a few people. I Spit on Your Grave 1, I heard, was garbage. I heard...
talking the remake there for 1.
I'm talking the remake. I'm not talking the original. The original absolutely deserves its place in history. The I Spit on Your Grave remake, the original I heard was terrible. The second one I heard, people were surprised it was actually really good. But then the third... But it had nothing to do with the first one. The third is a direct sequel to the first one, and it basically is rape the movie.
That's what people accuse the original of being, honestly.
Yeah, but the original, it was rape revenge the movie. But the thing was, there wasn't anything like that at the time, which is why, you know, it really deserves its place in history. Okay,
the remake. She becomes Jigsaw. Instead of getting her revenge like in the original.
Oh, she sets up traps and
she's setting up traps. She got fish hooks in their eyes, you know, traps and try to get out of this. She becomes, it's a Saw sequel, really. It's not an I Spit on Your Grave remake. It's a Saw sequel. You could easily have taken the Amanda character from the Saw movies, put her in there, and it's an official Saw sequel. That's how much it has in common with I Spit on Your Grave.
I wish they were on Netflix or something, because like I want to watch them out of morbid curiosity, but I don't really want to like have to pay anything more than I already pay to watch them. Well, I just want to be like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I have nothing to do tonight. Oh, I'm gonna watch I Spit on Your Grave remakes.
Well, let's dip all the way back in time here. What about what are traditionally considered the worst films of all time from our parents' generation, like Plan 9 from Outer Space, Robot Monster, Ega, Beast of Yucca Flats. Do those belong in the same category as something like Mortal Kombat Annihilation or Aliens vs. Predator Requiem? Because personally, I don't think Plan 9 is that bad of a movie. For one, it's tremendously enjoyable. It's ineptly made. You can't deny that. But its ineptness kind of is charming, isn't it?
It's because all you of Earth are idiots.
That's all I'm going to take out of you.
What's up? What was the other? You're stupid, minds.
Stupid.
Yeah. Well, Plan 9 has become more enjoyable for me after Ed Wood. Like I thought it was like entertainingly bad before, but then like after seeing Ed Wood, like I don't know. It became charming. And I wouldn't put the old like bad quote unquote movies in the same category, because the old movies, like they weren't setting out to make a bad movie. And I mean, nobody, well, except for maybe Uwe Boll and the guys who do the Seltzer brothers set out to do like make bad movies. But the old black and white horror, you know, sci-fi, whatever's, they had a certain charm, and they were, you know, like they're made like a, you know, they made something. They just don't feel the same. They don't feel bad. Like there are some movies, you know, when you're watching it, you're like, holy crap, they put $100 million into this and it's awful. But the old ones, they just had a certain charm to them, and they don't necessarily, like, they're entertaining because you can kind of watch them and goof on them. But movies like Mortal Kombat Annihilation, like you just can't. Like, there's really little to no enjoyment to be had.
What about when it comes to the modern definition of what a bad movie is? And I'm going to go to Mystery Science Theater. For all the good MST3K has done for the horror, sci-fi, and even comedy genres, they kind of, in a strange, unintended way, redefined what's a bad movie. For instance, Jeff Lieberman was very angry when he saw his 1976 movie Squirm on Mystery Science Theater. He, not realizing that Joel Hodgson was not part of the show at that point, this is the Sci-Fi Channel era, called up Joel because they had a couple of friends in common and bitched about it. And Joel even told him, according to an interview in Videoscope magazine, Squirm shouldn't have been on Mystery Science Theater. It's a great movie. So in a weird way, has Mystery Science Theater somehow redefined what a bad movie is for the genre, or at least to the mainstream audience?
I'm curious about the Squirm episode, because the thing is, Squirm is heavily edited. And
oh God, there are whole characters missing from the version I saw on television years earlier.
Yeah, so I like really wonder like what was there. Is there something to that? Like, I mean, I really would like to know, because yeah, Squirm, there's like Squirm is a genuinely creepy, like good movie, and it shouldn't have been on there. Like, you know, Iga deserved to be on there. You know, a lot of the movies that they've done deserve to be on there, but Squirm didn't. So I wonder, I know they ran into instances where, especially towards the end in the sci-fi era, where a lot of times they kind of had to take what they could get the rights to. And that might have been a case of, you know, we need a movie, and that might have been the only one that they were able to acquire. But yeah, Squirm is not a bad movie at all. But as far as your question of them changing the definition, Mike Nelson and all of them are the first ones to admit the best Mystery Science Theaters are the ones where there is something enjoyable about the movie. They're not just bad for the sake of being bad. There are plenty of really horrendously bad movies out there. But when you watch something like Gamera, or you watch something like Laser Blast, like there's a certain charm to them. And they're like, those are the kind of movies that we go after. You know,
but then there are the Space Mutinies, which are really awful.
Well, yeah, but there's still like a certain, like, I don't know, there's that, you know, the je ne sais quoi of them. There's something that you can still watch it with your friends and kind of goof. There's some movies now, especially, where you sit down and you try to watch it and like you goof and you can't, you know, it's just you can't make fun of it, because they've said, they're like, we don't look for bad, they're, you know, just bad movies. We look for that certain kind of bad movies. And there are a lot of people that don't understand that. They think that they're just going after bad movies because they'll, oh my God, you have to do this piece of crap. And it's like, no, that's, you know, we don't do like just that inept garbage. We're trying to find something that has something redeemable in it.
Well, because like I remember it was either the Sci-Fi Channel series premiere or the second episode where they did Universal's Revenge of the Creature. And I was like, what the hell is that doing on Mystery Science Theater?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, there are some that they kind of had to just take. You know, like they could take, you know, take what they get. That's why the show, like the show didn't end because of the ratings. The show ended because you had movies that cost $100,000 to make, and they wanted $1 million for them to license it. And they basically, you know, because they were seeing how popular the show was. And so you had all these people that owned the rights to bad movies that were just overcharging for it. That's why they had so many like weird, like Russian, they had the Russian Christmas Santa Claus movie. And it was just all these really weird foreign movies that they could get a hold of. And it finally got to the point of where like, all right, look, the wells run dry of what we're able to afford. And they had to call it quits.
But then there's also the fact, and again, I'm not trying to blame Mike and all them for this, that I'm blaming the viewers. And I don't mean the real Misties. I mean the casual viewers. Those of us who grew up, I don't know how you found Mystery Science Theater. I found them during the second Comedy Central season, and then I watched them, you know, straight through the end of the Sci-Fi Channel era. There are people who didn't see them until they were already off the air, and they use Mystery Science Theater as the definition of what a bad movie is. If it's on Mystery Science Theater, that means it's a bad movie. And I think they unintentionally created that label for their catalog. I mean, like, I see reviews of movies where they go, God, I wish Mystery Science Theater were around so they would do this movie. And I'm like, are you nuts? This is a Satan's Cheerleaders? This is a great movie. What is your freaking problem?
Well, that's the other thing. Like, if you go to the IMDb's bottom 100, there's so many movies on there that are from Mystery Science Theater, because people, you know, they watch the Mystery Science Theater episode. Oh, God, it's a terrible movie. And then they go and they vote it. Like, there was a time where there was pretty much every episode of Mystery Science Theater. The movie was listed on there as the bottom, 100. And I'm like, look, all right.
You need to see more movies, people.
Well, I always tell people that when I get somebody that's like, oh, my God, I watched Event Horizon and it's the worst movie I ever saw. I'm like, well, apparently you've only seen two movies.
Event Horizon's pretty decent, actually.
Yeah, like that's not even
the third act, but it's still pretty decent.
But it's like you've apparently not seen enough movies. When you are watching movies like The Hills, you know, then get back to me and tell me about bad movies.
On the TV Tropes page for this show, I'm compared with my movie knowledge to Quentin Tarantino. I don't know if that's fair to me or Quentin. Really, it comes down to like people like you and I and Peter and that. We've seen movies the general public have never even heard of. Brad Jones was in New York City at the New York City Comic Con at the Channel Awesome panel just this week, and somebody thanked him for Radiodrome for exposing, back in the Brad era, obviously, to movies he would have never even heard of if he hadn't have heard Brad and I talking about them. I have to admit, Cecil, that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing a really weird service for people, you know?
Well, I get that fairly often. Like I get, when I do my, my videos and I do my Netflix recommendations, I get so many people that are like, I found movies that I now love that I never would have found before because the general, mainstream is not talking about them. Now, I mean, I touch on some mainstream movies, but, a lot of the stuff that I talk about, it's like people have no idea that this thing exists. And they'll be like, holy crap, there's this actor who I love. I had no idea he made a horror movie or something. And I'm like, well, you could always go to the IMDb, like it's not like there's some hidden secret, thing, but I think a lot of people just, they stay to the mainstream. And, so when people like us point out the weird stuff, they kind of go off the road and start checking that stuff out. And yeah, I always take pride in that. It's cool to know that, if you didn't talk about this movie, then this person never would have found this thing that they now love. And it's cool,
People often confuse what is a bad movie and what is a low-end movie. People immediately assume nowadays that a direct-to-video film, I can't even count how many reviews I read for direct-to-video films, either of the day coming out, on DVD finally now, or newer ones, where people go, this was shockingly good. Because they're genuinely surprised that if a movie is released direct to video, that it can be any good. Like that's some sort of a foreign concept. That, well, if it wasn't released to theaters, then how good could it have been? So, Cecil, where can people find you liking bad movies, but not bad, bad movies? You like good, bad movies.
I certainly do. You can find me over at escapistmagazine.com, goodbadflix.com, and I am Trachenberg on YouTube because YouTube won't let me change the name of it. But if you do a search for Good Bad Flicks, you'll find me on YouTube. And then look me up on Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff where I talk about movies and I give them a lot of praise, and I don't talk about, I very seldomly will mention bad movies.
You can contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Remember, guys, go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, go to 1201beyond.com, buy some t-shirts. Also, I am a columnist for Fangoria Magazine, so make sure you pick up Fangoria Magazine. And I've got a couple of pieces coming out in the next issue of Delirium, Charles Band's magazine, as well. So remember, keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold, yada, yada, yada.
Radio Drone is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.